Hello, I'm Lorcan Malone, Chief Executive of the Analytics Institute of Ireland, and you're very welcome to our podcast series, Data Leaders. In these podcasts, I chat with some of the most important and influential people in the data analytics area in Ireland, and I try to find out a little bit about the people and personalities behind the careers. I also want to explore their philosophy in relation to data and analytics in general, and also find out a little bit about where they think the industry is going in the future. I hope you enjoy this series of interviews, and if you do, please subscribe below. Thank you.
Hello, everybody, and you're very welcome to our Data Leaders in Conversation podcast. This month, I am interviewing a very interesting person, Francesca Kay. Francesca is the Chief Information Officer of the Central Statistics Office, the CSO. Obviously a big data organization. So it'll be very interesting to understand, Francesca, what a CIO does in an organization like the CSO. We're going to be using a lot of initials here, I think, in this conversation. Maybe we could start, Francesca, with, I know you're only 9 months in the role, but maybe you could tell us a little bit about the CSO. I know we know it as an organization that does a census, but I'm not sure we know an awful lot more about it than that. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about the role of the organization, the size of it, and what work it actually does.
Hi, thank you very much for asking me to come and talk to you. It's lovely to be here. So just to tell you a little bit about the CSO, I suppose fundamentally, it's all about providing data and insight to inform debate, to support decision-making, and also to support accountability in Ireland as well. And if I kind of quote a UN fundamental principle of official statistics, it's that it's an indispensable element for the creation of a democratic and informed society. So that sounds very grand. We take it very seriously. And yes, lots of people have heard about the census. That's probably one of our primary outputs. But we do all sorts of statistics across the social statistics side. So things around the labour force, well-being, right across all the way through to economic statistics and looking at things like GDP, inflation, unemployment, employment rates. So it's a huge range of different types of statistics to give that insight into society and into the economy.
And who's your customer then, Francesca?
So lots of different customers. So central government are clearly a big user of our data. They use it to help think about what types of policies and also to have data that they can use to then evaluate the effectiveness of those policies. But we also provide data to local government, to businesses, to citizens. Sort of anybody really can be a user of our data and statistics so that they can use that to hold people to account and help make them business decisions. If you think about where do you want to put a new supermarket, where might you want to put a new road? So it's a whole different range of data that we provide.
And so anybody trying to make those decisions, even in a private capacity, has access to that data to be able to make those decisions.
Absolutely. So we provide the statistics themselves. We've got the kind of website, which is the main source for our statistics. But we also have a system there that allows you to download data as well. It's obviously all anonymous and so forth. But yes, you can get access both to the data itself, but also to some of the analysis and insight that our statisticians provide.
Excellent. And tell me just a little bit about the size and scope of the organisation. So it's relatively large, I think, and it's in a couple of different geographical areas.
Yeah, so I think overall it's about 1,000. That includes quite significant numbers of our field force. So people that before the lockdowns would go out and knock on people's doors and ask you to fill in our surveys. And also people at ports and airports as well would be collecting data. That peak with the census, that goes up by another 5,000 as we send our enumerators out across the country. We have offices, the main office is based in Cork, but we also have offices in Dublin, in Rathmines and Swords. And as I say, our field offices are spread right across Ireland to kind of go and speak to people in person around some of our surveys.
And how many would be in the kind of in our area of data analytics and data science, Francesca, of that 1,000 people?
So you've got a bit of a mixture. You've kind of got the technology stuff. So my particular area, which is I can come on to if you like, but it's a range. So it's about 120, 130. And then we would have the statistical areas where a lot of that analysis is done. I'm fairly new, so I'm not quite sure, but several hundred in that area.
So it's very sizable as an organization. It's probably one of the biggest analytics or data organizations in the country. Okay. And then can you tell me a little bit about the role of a CIO in an organization like that? And not only a little bit about your role, Francesco, but maybe, you know, no little girl is born with the intention of becoming a CIO. So how did you end up coming to this role, 9 months ago? And what was your career journey up to that?
Okay. So maybe I'll start with that first. I guess so. Almost going back to my childhood, I came from quite a scientific-based family. My mum was a doctor, and my dad actually was a statistician. Okay. So my sister, we all did maths, we did science. It was that kind of household. Albeit, I did actually end up doing a politics degree. I loved history, but it's analysis. It's still looking at data and evidence and coming up with thoughts and ideas. And then I went to university and thought, what do I do with my life? I've got no idea. What will have a future? And IT, I thought, there's going to be computers around for a very long time. So that strikes me as a good profession. And if I'm honest, it probably wasn't much more considered than that. But actually, when I joined, I found I liked it. And I kind of switched between running IT CIOs, but also running large transformation programs. So my first career started in the private sector, and I worked across a number of organizations, some consultancy, but also some like Virgin Mobile. So I spent about 7 years in telco. So a kind of different range, but either running programs or running IT departments. I then decided I wanted to change, wanted to move away from the private sector, do something that was a bit different, had a different purpose. And ended up at the Office for National Statistics in the UK, where I spent 11 years, again, moving between. I ran the Census Transformation Programme there for a while. I ran the Economic Statistics Transformation Programme. And my last role there was as Interim Director General for Data, IT and Data Science. So quite a broad role. And then I thought, what do I do next? The one thing I haven't done is move countries.
Yeah. Fourth
job. Advertised, thought this would be absolutely fascinating. I knew CSO, I'd met them through international conferences. They're an excellent organisation. And I thought, yeah, why not go? So here I am, I feel very fortunate. And then the CIO role here is probably a little different from the traditional CIO roles because it covers the technology areas, but also statistical methodology. So we have an area of expertise looking at very clever things that they do with statistics in terms of thinking like, how do you edit data, impute it, make sure our survey designs aren't biased and so forth. I also look after the quality area, so statistical quality, but also the quality of the processes across the organization. And more recently, I now also lead the administrative data area, which is bringing in administrative data from different sources so that we can use it, because we're slowly over time moving away from surveys to using more secondary data sources. So it's quite a broad area. And really what we're trying to do is bring those different areas together and make sure they work in a cohesive way so that we can provide data in a way that is easily accessible, but safe and secure for statisticians to use, and then ultimately researchers and other users of our data.
And have you found a big difference culturally between working in the organisation in the UK and its equivalent here in Ireland? Sorry, I didn't tell you I was going to ask you that question.
Yeah, I mean, there are similarities in there, and there are differences. I suppose one of the big differences is money.
Right.
The CSO is a phenomenally efficient organisation compared to the budgets that are available at ONS. They run a much tighter budget than before. But there are a lot of cultural similarities. The passion for providing data for public good to provide insight, to help, you know, decision makers, to try and help, you know, almost the unfortunate in society. So how can we provide that data and information for others to help improve everybody's lives? And there is that commonality there in terms of the passion to do that, and the belief that what we do really matters and can make a big difference. So I think there's those similarities as well. And I'd say the trends are similar, moving away from survey more to administrative data. So I think there's a lot of similarity. I think in some areas, ONS was a little further ahead. It's further along in its journey in embracing data science, machine learning, AI than CSO. It's also in terms of technology, moving more into sort of cloud technologies. But in other ways, Ireland is further ahead in terms of its use of identifiers to help bring data together. So, you know, there's differences, positives as well in both.
Yeah, very good. And if we look, I suppose if we take a step back now and just look at how the CSO collects its data, and if we think that it's, again, the primary channel, I suppose, is the census. And I don't think they've changed. I mean, if we look back to Roman times, we could think about the census back in Bethlehem or whatever, Judea at the time. It hasn't changed that much, has it? I mean, it's still people knocking on your door, giving you a form that you complete, and you complete that and you're legally obliged to do so and tell the truth on it. Do you see that methodology evolving? I mean, everything else has changed so much in terms of technology over the last 25, 30 years, and yet we're still using that kind of very significant paper and pen style approach with the census. So how is up-to-date technology, like you've mentioned with machine learning and AI and et cetera, how is that being brought into the data collection process, and how will it evolve over time, do you see?
Yeah, it's a very good question about the census. And indeed, the census is going ahead next year in 2022. And it is the traditional model of delivering the form to home and picking up. But I think fundamentally, I suppose data collection is changing in two main ways. Firstly, we've increasingly moved our surveys onto online collection. That was something that was accelerated through the pandemic when our field force could not go out and collect data. So we've increasingly moved both our business and our social surveys online. And we will intend to be doing the same for the census after 2022. And indeed, CSO has received some funds out of the National Recovery Fund from the EU to help build that capacity to move to an online census. So our full intention is in the next census that it will be online. However, what we're also exploring is how can we use data that is already available across different sources to potentially replace or certainly change the way that we do the census. So rather than going out and asking everybody about questions that perhaps we already know the answers to, we can tailor those questions to ones that we don't already have that data somewhere across government. And, you know, there are various reasons that we want to do that, none more than to be able to get more timely data, because Ireland's great over here. They do a census every 5 years. But still, if we can make sure that we're gathering that data in a more timely manner, then of course that will help make better decisions. And that's essentially where your AI and machine learning can come in. As we look at those alternative data sources, we can use things like machine learning to help bring that data in, to do the data engineering, etc. So in terms of how we collect data, that is really the route of where we're going.
Okay, it's great to hear. I think there's obviously, we all want to see new technologies, but we do have to be careful of, I suppose, the democratic process, that people don't necessarily have access to technologies. Older people may not have the skills to do things online. I've seen it very recently with the COVID cert and traveling, as I have over the last few weeks, people stuck in queues, not realizing they were supposed to have this form and that form completed and whatever, and not being able to easily access these things online. So I think it's important that we maintain the ability to ensure that everybody has easy access to being able to do these things, irrespective of
it. Absolutely. And the most important thing about a census is that it is entirely inclusive and it includes Really. And we will always have alternatives. So people would prefer, even, you know, when we have an online census, we will always allow people to have paper forms. So if they prefer to fill their census in that way, they will have absolutely have that option. You know, what we're trying to do, I think it's what's really important and becoming apparent to us, is that you know, getting people to share their data is challenging. The response rates on surveys are dropping, and we have to make it as easy for people so that they can share the data in the way that suits them, whilst making, you know, having that trust in us that we will keep it secure, we'll keep it confidential, we'll keep it private, which is fundamental to the CSO and how our statistics.
Yeah, which is the question I was going to ask you. Have you seen resistance to the sharing of data? People are getting more sensitive to and understanding the value of the private data and why it's important to maintain control of that to a certain extent. So are you worried, are you concerned about people resisting things like the census in time? Because it does ask some very very deep questions about your salary, about your relationships, etc., where you're living, all of those things are quite scary sometimes to be answering. How do you handle that, and or do you just say, look, we were legally obliged to ask, so just get on with it?
We are legally, obliged to ask. We are, you know, with the Statistics Act is, I suppose, the legal basis for collecting the data that we do. However, we are absolutely subject to GDPR as well, and therefore we have to use data proportionately, you know, safely, and we have obligations to do that, and we take that very seriously. I think for us, you know, for us, we're fortunate, I think we work very hard at it, to ensure that CSO is trusted. It is an organisation that the Irish citizens on the whole trust, and that maintaining that trust is phenomenally important. And to do that, I think we have to be really transparent about what we do. So this is the data we have, this is what we collect, this is what we do with it, and being really open about that, and you know, obviously making sure that we do keep it safely, we do keep it secure, we only use it in a way that you know, we're allowed to do so. So I think, you know, we spend a lot of time thinking about that. And I think my experience in terms of database in the UK, but over in Ireland as well, is that if you explain to people what you're doing with that data, you explain the public good that can be done, broadly, for the vast majority of people, are happy for it to be used, but as long as it's, you know, kept private and it's secure. I think you explain, and that's where that transparency comes.
Look, we've learned an awful lot, haven't we, over the last, say, particularly over the last 12 months with the importance of sharing our medical information for the public good in the long, you know, in order to combat COVID and ensure the success of our vaccination regimes. The public good is hugely important, because we do want our decision makers to be making these decisions based on real data rather than gut feel or some political imperative, making sure that the resources are shared where they're needed properly. And it's only with accurate data analysis that we can do that. So I think it's hugely important, and it's a great reflection on your organisation. Just to wrap up, Francesca, because we're running short on time, I do want to, one, as a CEO of the Analytics Institute over the last 5 years, I've been really struck by the level of skills and knowledge within the public sector in Ireland in terms of data analytics and data science. There's some fantastic people working there. And doing brilliant jobs. Do you find it hard to attract talent? Is it difficult to attract? I know you're doing very interesting work, but is it difficult to attract talent, particularly when you've got a private sector that seems to be paying more and more and more for skilled people in this area?
Yes, it is. It is a challenge. I think, as you said, the skills are scarce, and therefore, to what I suppose our selling point, as you touched on a little bit there, is the interest in the interesting that we do and the work that, you know, that it really matters. It's there for public good. So I think trying to keep it as interesting and as varied as possible is some of the way that we do attract absolutely fantastic analysts and statisticians. I think increasingly embracing data science, using AI, machine learning. We're at the beginning, I'd say, beginning of that journey, for want of a better phrase. And I think we've got a ways to go there. But I think it's embracing those sorts of alternatives that keeps people interested and would attract people to the CSO. And you get to use the in terms of data, there isn't anywhere better, I suspect, in Ireland. If you want to be able to get hold of data, use it for interesting research, for interesting and giving to policymakers, there's nowhere better than the CSO.
For sure, and at least you're doing something that is absolutely towards the public good, which can't be a bad thing, indeed. And then do you invest, Francesca, does the organisation invest in skills development with your people? Are people constantly training and learning?
Yes, we take that really seriously, both in terms of the sort of technical skills, but also those analytical skills. So we try and make sure that our statisticians have that continual professional development, and we have to invest in. You see, the ones we're looking at the moment is scaling people up more in things like R and Python as we move more into machine learning and AI. I mean, of course, we get fantastic sort of graduates that come through from universities. They have those sorts of skills. So it's important that we learn from them as well, actually. But yeah, making sure that we invest in those sorts of programs. I mean, our staff, lots of them are, you know, have got masters and PhDs. They're very well, highly skilled, educated people. And, you know, it's incumbent on us to make sure we provide them with the right tools in order to be able to do their roles, and that's part of my sort of dual role in terms of CIO and data.
Very good. Listen, finally, just to wrap up, it's brilliant to see another female leader in this area, and I'm very heartened over the last 3 or 4 years to see that increasingly across public sector roles and in the private sector as well, where we see more women in the leadership roles, and we have within the Analytics Institute a data leaders forum, and it's very heartening to see sort of about 1/3 of those leaders now being females. How have you found becoming a female leader in what has been a traditionally probably male dominated sector, and have you found that challenging, and at the same time have you seen opportunities for yourself as a result of being one of the female voices around the table?
I mean, it is challenging. I think part of it is probably fortunate for me in the sense of I suppose I go back to my childhood. Although I was one of three daughters, you know, we were, because my father was a statistician, my mother was a doctor, my elder sister is an engineer. I kind of grew up in fairly male dominated or surrounded by male dominated professions. So I suppose I kind of built a certain resistance or resilience, really, not resistance, sorry, resilience.
Yeah, yeah.
Resistance as well, to resilience to that. But I think, you know, it has been difficult. Sometimes it's hard to get your voice heard. And I think one of the things I've learned most is to build those connections with other females in particular. I think it's phenomenally important that we support each other. Little things like, you know, if there's another woman in the room, you can see who's trying to get a word in edgeways, to introduce them into the conversation and say, you know. So I think it's about helping each other. It's about making sure that as you go up, you keep the ladder down, you don't draw the ladder up behind you. And I like to, and I have something I'd like to do more in Ireland as well, but coach, mentor young women. And I think there's a lot to be said to be out there, you know, doing panels, doing conversations so that people can see it. And I think it's not just gender. I think it's ethnicity. I think it's diversity, neurodiversity. People need to see others like them in leadership roles. And I say, you know, and I like to do that because I think people need to see it to believe it. And that's what I'm told by all sorts of people. So I think it's really important to do that.
Well, hear her, and congratulations on that. Listen, You're very welcome. I know it's 9 months later, but you're very welcome to Roy. You're very welcome to Ireland. I wish you every success. I'm delighted that you've joined the Analytics Institute as well, Francesca, because I think you'll add a lot. You will be an asset to our organization in terms of giving that perspective. I think the CSO are very lucky to have you. And thank you for sharing your thoughts with us this afternoon. And I look forward to seeing you at future events in the Institute.
Well, thank you very much. It's lovely to talk to you. And yes, I've been really interested. The Analytics Institute seems a fantastic network and event, and I'm sure I will be making use of it a lot in the future. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. If you'd like to hear more from other data leaders, please subscribe below.